Good morning. Welcome to our Bible study this morning. We're going to be looking in the Sinai Covenant. And it was the fourth of the series of covenants that God made with people. And so we're going to look at that this morning. Before we start, Phil, would you like to pray for me and the study? Okay, last week, the questions were for studying, or what we were going to look at is, what is the Sinai Covenant? So what is it? What actually happened at Mount Sinai? What did it do? And when did it end? And if it didn't end, how is it applied today? Okay, so if it ended, we don't need to look at how it's applied today. And if it didn't end, then we should, then obviously it would apply still, right? So turn your Bibles to Exodus 20. How many of you were aware that the covenant, or what we call the Ten Commandments, was given to the children of Israel three times? Raise your hand if you are aware of that. If you turn to Exodus chapter 20, if I have this right, now this is a Bible study, so you jump in here if... But in Exodus chapter 20, actually let's go back to verse 19, chapter 19 I mean. God's talking to the children of Israel. And in verse 9 of chapter 19, he said, "And the Lord said unto Moses, Lo, I come unto thee in the thick cloud, that the people may hear, that I may, when I speak unto thee, and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go unto the people, and sanctify them today for tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai." Okay? And it talks about setting up borders and all that. And in verse 19, "And the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, and Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice." Very interesting piece of information there. All the people of Israel heard God talking. You can read that in Deuteronomy. It says that Moses told the children, "You heard God talking to you from heaven." I believe that's in Deuteronomy. You might get there yet. You need a pen? Very good. And so, in verse 19, verse 21, "And the Lord said unto Moses, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through. And the Lord gazed upon many of them, and they perish." It was important that the children of Israel did not see God, only heard him. And then in chapter 20, "And God spake all these words, saying," and God speaks what we know as the Ten Commandments to the children of Israel. And when they hear the Ten Commandments, In verse 18, all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise and the trumpet and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And Moses said, and they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God has come to prove you, that his fear may be up before your faces, and ye sin not. Okay, so that was the first giving of the covenant. Then you go and go to Exodus 24, chapter 24. And you have another account here. And he said unto Moses, verse 1, come up thou unto the Lord, thou, Aaron, and Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and worship ye afar off. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, and they shall not come nigh, neither shall the people go up with him. In verse 3, in the end of verse 3, it says, all the words which the Lord has said we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and rose up early in the morning, and built an altar under a hill. In verse 7, he took the book of the covenant, and read it in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord has said we will do, and be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made with you concerning these words. And then in verse 9 it says, then went up Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and the 70 elders of Israel. And these 70 elders would have been the elders that would have been made when Moses' father-in-law came and told him that he can't bear the weight of the people alone. So now there are 70 elders in Israel. And they saw God, in verse 10. They saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, paved work of a sapphire stone, and there were, and as it were, the body of heaven in his clearness. And then in verse 12, and the Lord said unto Moses, come up to me. And this is what we want to look at this morning. Come up to me in the mount and be there, and I will give you, tables of stone and a law and commandments. God gave Moses three things. Gave him tables of stone and a law and commandments. So when Moses went up on the mountain the first time with God, he didn't just get the Ten Commandments. He got the tables of stone, which were the covenant. And we'll read that later. The Ten Commandments were the covenant that God gave. And we can look at that in Deuteronomy. It talks about that more. And a law and a commandment, which I have written, and thou mayest teach them. And Moses rose up, and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the mount of God. And now, we don't have enough time to read this whole account, but while he's up there, God's in chapter 25 and 26 and 27, God starts, 28, starts talking about the priest and how he's to dress and some laws, the candlestick, the showbread, order of the sacrifices, and Aaron and his sons. And when you get over to let's drop in here at chapter 31. And this is just before he comes down out of the mountain with the golden calf, but in verse 12 he talks about the Sabbath, and God starts bringing the Sabbath into Jewish or the people of Israel's lifestyle. And verse 18, and he gave unto Moses, that when he had made an end of communing with him upon the mount, two tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of God. And those are what we know as the Ten Commandments. And then you see in verse 32, they made a golden calf. And Moses comes down out of the mountain in 32:19, and he breaks the Ten Commandments. He smashes them because he's so angry with the people that they turned away. And in verse 32, Moses starts pleading for the people of Israel again, that God would forgive them. "Ye know, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written." Very powerful statement that Moses made there. "And the Lord said unto Moses, whosoever sinned against me, him will I blot out of the book of life, or out of my book." And so there's, through Moses' prayers, the people find mercy. And in chapter 34 then, "And the Lord said unto Moses, hew out two stones like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest." And so Moses goes back up on the mountain, and God gives him the tables of stone again. And this time then God says that he's supposed to put them in the Ark of the Covenant. And what verse is that now? Where he tells him to make an ark. But anyway, but three times God, now let's go back to the first time here in Exodus 20, and we'll find something that I found kind of interesting when I was studying this. In verse 18, "And all the people saw the thundering and the lightning and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. When they saw, they removed and stood afar off, and they said unto Moses, speak thou unto us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." Why were the people so afraid to hear from God, like the voice of God? What do you think overwhelmed them to the point where they said, we don't even want to hear God's voice anymore? They were so afraid of God. Why do you think that the people were experiencing that? Moses and the 70 elders we've just read, and Nadab and Abihu and Aaron, they stood in the presence of God and they weren't afraid. Why were the people afraid? What do you think? We're discussing what was the Sinai covenant here. And what made the people afraid when they heard God speaking to them?
Didn't they just see the holiness of God, the vast holiness of God in their own, I'm not sure, their own shortcoming of that?
Possibly. But it is also interesting to know that Moses didn't know the Ten Commandments either until they were spoken. Neither did Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu. None of those men had actually had a pre-briefing on the covenant that they could get prepared, so to speak. So when God spoke, you know. So there was something about the people. If you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10. God says something about the people. Deuteronomy verse 15 of chapter 10. Only the Lord had delight in thy fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all people. As it is this day, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart. Be no more stiff-necked. God repeatedly says about the children of Israel that they are a stiff-necked and wicked people. Does anybody know what stiff-necked means? By definition, stiff-necked.
Stubborn.
But it even has a stronger, if you look it up in my dictionary, it even has a stronger word than that. You're right. But it's obstinate. And another is pig-headed. So this morning, instead of saying stiff-necked, I'm going to read pig-headed. Okay? And be no more a pig-headed people. What's a pig head? Who knows anything about pigs? Pigs are the most obstinate, stiff-necked, self-centered things to move around in the barn that you can find. And God relates the people and their attitude and their mindsets to pigs. Maybe that's why they weren't allowed to eat pigs. I don't know. But they were a pig-headed people. They were bent, continuously bent on doing it their way and against the will of God. Totally bent that way as a nation. They were bent that way. And God could give them manna, send them quail. He could give them water out of the rock. And it was great for the moment. But I mean, as soon as the manna was all gone, they were right back to being what? Pig-headed. And when I got that definition, I started to understand how God was starting to feel about these people. And he begged them in verse 16. He said, circumcise your heart. And that's a new covenant concept that God was pleading in the Old Testament with his people, saying, have a heart change. Could I get you to change your heart? And the difference between the men that weren't afraid of God and the ones that were is that you can see that they were men who had different hearts than the nation. And when they stood before God, they weren't afraid. But the people then says, like back here in 2018, he said, don't let God talk to us anymore. And if you turn to Deuteronomy 18, God says something there that is really interesting. I thought, anyway. Verse 15. Did you know that prophets were never really in the heart and the mind of God when he brought the children out of Israel? God didn't want prophets in the nation. He wanted to speak to them like he did the first time on Sinai. And here you say in 18 verse 15, and the Lord said, I will raise up to thee a prophet from the midst of thee of thy brethren, like unto him ye shall hearken, according to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God in Horeb. Okay. This is another proof that God spoke out of the mountain to the people. In the desires of the Lord thy God in Horeb, in the day of the assembly, saying, let us not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see his great fire any more, that I die not. And the Lord said unto me, they have spoken well, that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak them all that I have commanded him. God made the first step here when he started talking with prophets of separating himself from the people, because they were pig-headed and they didn't want to hear from God. And that is the biggest limitation in the old covenant, is people separated themselves from God. And so God put a medium in there, prophets. It wasn't God's heart that they even had a king. And we can talk about that more if you want to. But God's original heart He does say in the law that if you get wicked and you want a king and be like other nations, this is how you have to do it. But it was never God's heart that they even have a king. God wanted to be in heaven. He wanted to speak to his people. He wanted to guide his people. And he wanted to destroy their enemies. He wanted to give them the land he promised to Abraham. But they are too pig-headed to receive it. And so God had a big problem. So he raised up prophets. And so when you read through the whole Old Testament, when you see a prophet speaking, you should remember, or we should all remember, that that was not God's original plan. It was a substitute idea. And because they were pig-headed, stiff-necked people. So that is the covenant. So let's go back here then to Exodus 24. Verse 12. And God gave him the tables of stone, the covenant. He gave him a law, and he gave him commandments. What did... Now here's what we want to look at. What was the purpose of the covenant? What was the purpose of the law? And what was the purpose of the statutes and commandments? They're not all one thing. Okay. Does anybody have any ideas what the purpose of the covenant was? Why did God give the Ten Commandments? Or in your studies, when you were thinking about this, why did God give the Ten Commandments? They already had a covenant, the covenant with Abraham, that they would get the land. Right? So why did they get the Sinai covenant? Why do you think God did that? They were already covenanted people. Right? But God came again and gave them another covenant. To really get good answers, you have to pretty much go to the New Testament, where there's a lot of apologetics on this. If you go to Hebrews 12, verse 18. For ye have not come to the mount which was touched, and burnt with fire, nor unto the blackness and darkness of tempest, and the sound of a trumpet, and the voice of words, which voice ye have heard, entreated that the word should not be spoken to them anymore. When did that happen? That was the first time God spoke on Mount Sinai, right? And he's telling us as believers today, we didn't come to that mountain, okay? For they could not endure that which is commanded, and if so much as the beast touched the mountain, it should be stoned or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. Moses went up the mountain, but he was shaken in his boots. That's what the Bible says. And I don't actually blame him. If you try to picture in your mind how that might have looked, going up an earthquaking, burning mountain would probably be more than even the brave of us could do without sweating. So, but he did it because his heart was right before God. But ye have come to the mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly of the church, unto the firstborn, which is written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling, of speaking of better things than that of Abel. See that you refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, who is that? For if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, who spake on earth? Who represented God on the earth? That was Jesus, right? The anointed one. Jesus came to earth and spoke to us the mind of God, right? Much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven. Who spoke from heaven? That was God, right? So we get in the new covenant, we got a double whammy, because if we refuse Jesus Christ and we refuse the God of heaven who spoke, I mean, we're really in a corner. Whose voice then shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not earth only, but also heaven. And this word yet once more signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things which that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken shall remain. Therefore we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. What was the purpose of the covenant? Was the question that we asked, right? Why did God give the Sinai covenant? God gave the covenant because he wanted the people to fear him. And he set up a standard by which right and wrong could be judged. And he gave him the law. If you turn to Galatians 3 here. In verse 19, Galatians 3:19, wherefore then serveth the law? It was added because the transgressions unto the seed should come to whom the promise was made, and it was ordained by angels in the hands of a mediator. And it says in verse 21, is the law then against the promises of God? God forbid. For if there had been a law given which could have given life, verily righteousness should have come by the law. Okay. The reason that God gave the law on Mount Sinai, he said he went up and got the tables of stone and he got the law. It says here that the law was added because the people were pig-headed. Okay. Stiff-necked, rebellious people. So they needed a law to guide them through their thought process so that they would think the way God wanted them and keep them in check. Okay? Another thing, when God makes covenants with people, he did it so he could bless them. Right? That's one of the reasons God gives covenants, is so he can bless people. And the reason he wants to bless us is because if we know what his will is and we live in it, God wants to use us and fill us, and God wanted to do that with his Israelite people. And you have to remember that they were just about ready to go into the land of Canaan and take over and wipe out these wicked nations of Israel. And in Deuteronomy, you can read about that. That's in Deuteronomy 10. Yeah, Deuteronomy 9, verse 5. Not for thy righteousness, or for the uprightness of thine heart, do thou go in to possess their land. Deuteronomy 9, verse 5. But for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a pig-headed people. Now, does anybody know what righteousness means? Do you remember what righteousness, the definition of righteousness is? It's reconciliation, right? So if you read this verse 5 now, not for the reconciliation or for the reconciliation of thine heart do you go to possess the land. It's not because the children of Israel were reconciled with God, but it's because of what God said to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In verse 6 it says, understand therefore that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy reconciliation with God, because you are a pig-headed people. They weren't reconciled with God, and they were just the way they are. But God was using them because of the covenant he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's kind of interesting, because you read in Genesis, God came to Abraham and he gave him the covenant that we talked about before. And then he came to Isaac and reestablished that covenant. And he also came to Jacob and reestablished it with Jacob, but he never came and reestablished it with Jacob's sons. Right? It stops at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob's children didn't get the covenant from God. It was never reestablished. And when they came out to Sinai, God gave them a new covenant, which was the Ten Commandments. Now, some of those covenants that he made with Abraham were still carrying them through, or still going through, but a new covenant was required for these people to be in the will and the... to be in God's will. Is anybody thinking by now? Or have something they'd like to throw into the mix or into the discussion? So God had a stiff-necked, rebellious people that he wanted to use for something that he had called them to do. He gave them the Ten Commandments so that they would understand this is his covenant. And with every covenant, there's a sign. Okay? There's a sign with every covenant. Do you remember? The covenant that he made for the land with Abraham, there was a smoking torch and a burning lamp, right? With a covenant with Christ coming through Abraham, there was circumcision. What was the sign of the covenant with the Ten Commandments? There was a sign given, or the way that they would know that they were in God's will, and this covenant was for them. Did anybody? Does anybody have any ideas what that sign might have been?
Right then and there, did he not give them the stones that had him engraved in the stones?
I'm looking for a physical sign, you know, but...
Yeah. I never wrote that reference down, but... Or somebody...
Well, it says in verse 8, it says, the blood confirms the covenant of the Lord. The blood that he splattered over the people confirmed the covenant.
Okay, that's in Exodus. Where are you right now? 24. Yes. That is a very interesting verse. Because do you have any idea what that maybe was? The Book of the Covenant? There's not really any specific mention to ever a writing of that book, unless someone of you are aware of that or know otherwise. Was it King Josiah that brought the children of Israel back from wickedness, that found the book in the temple? Who was that king that found, the priest found the Book of the Covenant in the temple and he read it to the people? Was that King Josiah? That Book of the Covenant was found again in King Josiah's reign. And by the reforms that King Josiah brought about from reading that book, it would seem that it would have been the Book of the Law. Like the law. But so when they got the law and they got the covenant, that sprinkling of blood, I think, means that they, by letting Moses sprinkle them and the book, they put themselves under the law. They agreed to obeying and being under this law that God, or that Moses got on Mount Sinai. And even prior to that, see, when he went the first time, God actually told him some things. Or what do you think it might be? Not sure? Or... Sometimes I write things down and then I forget where I wrote them, but where does it talk to them about blessing and cursing? Deuteronomy 28, 29... Yeah. Yeah, and 28 verse 12. And the Lord shall open upon thee his good treasure, the heaven, to give the rain into thy land in its season, and bless all the work of thy hand, and thou shalt lend unto many nations, and thou shalt not borrow, and the Lord shall make thee head and not the tail, and thou shalt be above all, shall be above only, and thou shalt not be beneath, if that thou hearken unto the commandments that the Lord thy God, which I command thee this day, to observe and do them. And then the counter is, moreover, in chapter 28, verse 45, moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee until thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder and upon thy seed forever, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. best I can understand it, the blessing and the cursing of the nation of Israel was directly connected to the Ten Commandments. If the children of Israel obeyed the Ten Commandments, if you read through the blessings, I mean, they were blessed. I mean, there wasn't going to be any disease, there wasn't going to be any miscarriages, there wasn't going to be any premature death, there wasn't going to be anything. I mean, life was going to be good. They're going to be rich, they're going to have all they want to eat, there's going to be just, it was all good. There was, nothing could go wrong. I mean, if you wanted more land and it was inside the covenant, you just went out and killed them and took the land, and I mean, inside the borders of Canaan, it was all good. And you can read, there were periods of Jewish history when it was like that. When the people feared God, it was like that. Things went phenomenally well for them. The reign of King David would be a good example of that. And then you see in times in Israel's history where they turned their back on God. And they were cursed unbelievably. Way more than what would just be normal. They were cursed above the nations. But God said, and I didn't write it down, but you can look it up for yourself somewhere. It says that when I bless you, the curses that I'm giving are going to be on the other nations. So when God was blessing Israel, he was actually cursing their surrounding nations. And when God was cursing Israel, then he was going to bless the other nations so that the children of Israel could see, hey, we're losing out. And you see that then, you know, when with King Nebuchadnezzar and some of those other nations that grew up, took over. And Nebuchadnezzar, while Judah was cursed and in bondage in Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, he developed the greatest kingdom that there ever was. The head of gold in the statue, right? But God blessed Nebuchadnezzar like he would have blessed the children of Israel. But they were under his curse because they were in bondage. And so God blessed somebody else. And so you see how God, that played out in history. Whoever was under God's blessing prospered, and who was ever under his curse, they couldn't prosper no matter how smart they were, because God just held them back. And so here's the question then. Did the covenant at Sinai end? Are the Ten Commandments that God gave at Sinai, how long did that covenant go? Is it still going? Or is it done now?
I don't know if I would use the term that it's done now, but I think it is fulfilled now. I think it was fulfilled in Christ.
Okay. Why do you think that? Or this is a topic. People discuss the Ten Commandments and the Sinai Covenant. This is a topic that has been going on long before we were born, and long after we're dead, they're still going to be discussing it. Because it's just... So we would like to discuss it today. Go ahead.
I forget the question you'd asked me at the start when I took the mic again.
Yeah. I was just saying, based on what would you say that it was fulfilled?
Well, the short answer to that is that Jesus said, "Think not that I came to destroy the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill them." And that nothing is going to remain undone until all is fulfilled. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think you're referring to Matthew. Turn to in your Bibles to Matthew. Matthew chapter 5. Verse 18. And this verse, I got to say, this verse fascinates me. I think there's a lot more in this verse than would have ever really understood. In verse 17, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled." When Moses went up on Mount Sinai, he got three things. He got the covenant, he got the law, and he got the commandments, right? And Jesus is referring to what? He's referring to the law. Now, am I the only guy here that's making a differentiation between the Ten Commandments and the law? Maybe some of you are looking at me like, what's this guy saying? Have you always thought that the Ten Commandments were the law? Yeah, carry on. I'm trying to develop a discussion here, so I'm going to need more than me.
I guess, just thinking about it now, I have always thought that the Ten Commandments, like, the law was embodied in the Ten Commandments. Like, the Ten Commandments weren't the complete law, but they basically embodied the law.
Okay. So in essence, then, they are one. The short version and the long version. Okay. All right. What do you think? We know what I think and what he thinks. What do you think? We have to close in 5 minutes, so...
I don't know that I've ever... Yeah, I would have generally looked at the Ten Commandments and all the other commandments as an extension of the Ten Commandments, so more or less the same. They were all a part of the law given. And so you have the moral law, then you have the ceremonial law, but it's all the same thing. It's just... addressing different elements, different aspects of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Romans, or sorry, Galatians chapter chapter 3, he says that, you know, but before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. That's in Galatians 3, verse 23. Wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ. I personally would believe that this would include the Ten Commandments and the ceremonial law of sacrifices and all those things. And I'll explain why later. It certainly, I think we probably all agree that it's speaking about the ceremonial law. Mm-hmm. The question is the Ten Commandments included in that, or is the Ten Commandments something separate, something different? So as a starting point, we'd say certainly the ceremonial law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith has come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster. And so, obviously, after faith has come, meaning after Christ has come, after the new covenant, the old is now obsolete. It's no longer in effect. It's like two wills. Because now the new will is in effect. The old is no longer valid or effective or binding. And it's like if you would write a will 10 years ago, and now you would write a new will, and you would sign that before you die, the new will, the last will, the latest will, would be the one that would be binding and would be in effect. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with the Old Covenant and the New. So the Old Covenant, the ceremonial law, including the Ten Commandments, is no longer binding, it's no longer in effect. And the reason I would include the Ten Commandments, if you go back to Romans chapter 7, He says that in Romans 7, verse 5, for when we were in the flesh, the motions of sin which were by the law did work in our members to bring forth fruit unto death. But now, speaking of the new covenant, now we are delivered from the law, that being dead when we were held, that we should serve in newness of the Spirit, not in the oldness of the letter. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin, but by the law. And that talks about the reason for the law is because of transgression. For I had not known lust, except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. Now, where do we find that word, thou shalt not covet? I believe it's in the Ten Commandments. And so here he's, when he's speaking about the law that has been done away with, the law to which we are now being dead, and we're now serving in the newness, that's referring to the Ten Commandments.
I agree. I actually agree with everybody. See, and I don't know if that matters, but see, if you go back to the reason we started this Bible study, we started talking about peace, right? And Jonathan brings up a good point. What we said at the beginning, or what I said, or what the point I was trying to make is that in order to have peace with God, you need to understand what God wants from your life, how He's asking you to live your life, and when you know that, it brings an incredible amount of peace because you know that I'm in the will of God. And so you say to yourself, okay, this is not for me. God doesn't want me to... God's not requiring this of me in my time, in my... I'm a Gentile, I'm not a Jew, whatever. And so the reason that I'm coming to the Sinai covenant is because Jesus made a new covenant with us. The New Testament is full of it. It's a new covenant. It's a new covenant. It's a new covenant. And in the New Testament, they talk about the fulfilling of the law. They talk about a new covenant. And they talk about there are new statutes. There are new principles to live by. For instance, loving your enemies instead of killing them. That's a new statute that is brought up in the New Testament that was not in the Old Covenant. So we have new statutes, we have a new covenant, we have a new... What did I say? Anyway, whatever I was saying, that's what I... So, and a lot of times we beat ourselves up going back to the Old Covenant trying to figure out what the New Covenant says. And you have a lot of people trying to revive or spiritualize the Old Covenant. And it works for the guy that really believes in it, but his children just don't see it. And so they just go change it again and revive it a different way. And hence you have this big wheel going around of everybody just trying to revive this Old Covenant. Instead of just being fine with the fact that it's done. Do you follow me? And a lot of our peace is taken away when we try to become spiritual Jews. And so that's why I'm punching away at this Old Covenant stuff, because we have to separate ourselves from the Old Covenant to live in the will of Christ now. Okay? You cannot be an Old Covenant believer. But what is also important then is to understand which covenant we live in and how it applies and what God asks of us so that we can live holy lives. Because that's ultimately what God has asked us to do, right? He wanted the children of Israel to be holy, but they couldn't because they were pig-headed. And God is asking us in this covenant, don't be pig-headed anymore. Please stop being pig-headed. But like pig heads, we run back to the Old Covenant trying to find some righteousness. And God's saying, please stop doing that. And so, I was sitting at my desk thinking about how I should go ahead. This morning I tried to lay a foundation of what the old Sinai covenant was. how God, and it was very brief, but read those chapters yourself. But what would you like to do? Would you like to take each commandment in the Old Covenant and see how it came to a closure? Or would you like to just jump right into the New Covenant and study how things have changed? What would you like? I don't want to bore you with things that you're not interested in. I guess both could be interesting, depending how we looked at it. For instance, we have huge discussions on Sabbath in our generation. Have for a long time, but you have, what does honoring your father and mother mean in the New Covenant? What does thou shalt not kill mean in the New Testament? If it's stopped, Jesus changed some things pretty radically. So we can do it two ways. We can take each covenant theme, show how it was played in the Old Covenant, and see how it stopped and ended. And then when we do all 10 of those, we can jump into the New Covenant and study what the New Covenant is. Or we can just jump right into the New Covenant. It's whatever you just want. Who would like to study the 10 Commandments some more? Who would like to jump right into the New Covenant and study the New Covenant? One. Okay. Two. Think about it, and you can come talk to me after service if you want, but I'm trying to get my feelers out a bit to see. And also, I'm going to be gone again for 2 Sundays. I'm going to need somebody to fill in for me. April 1st and April 8th. I'm going to be away. So if somebody would like to pick up, you can either pick up this topic or another one. It's fine by me.